Hello, my lovely hungry potatoes. Guess who's back? Series 2. It's very exciting. How's tricks?
Yeah, good man. All good, my end. Had a lovely weekend doing some decorating with my girlfriend. That was great, man. How about yourself?
So get this right. Yesterday, I was having a lovely little fucking doze at about, I don't know, 4 o'clock, something like that. Little, you know, when like we put the heating on because we'd done some washing, so it was lovely and warm in here. I was very comfortable, just slipping off into a little sleep, and I've heard some dripping, right? And I thought nothing of it. I thought, oh, it's a shower, isn't it? It's having a little go. And I thought, well, no one's had a shower for, you know, all day today. Why is it dripping? And then I thought nothing else of it and just sort of carried on drifting. It was only when I heard clanging around from Olivia, bless her. I woke up and I said to her, are you all right? What's going on? She said, well, whatever you think it is happening in here, it's not funny. I walked into the kitchen, right? And there's water pissing through the electricity, through the sockets, and through the
Oh,
light
no.
fittings and everything. So I went and had a little knock upstairs immediately. And I said to him, is something leaking in your house? Because it's literally pissing through into our kitchen, like everywhere. Like all the electric's gone off. Everything's a bit knackered. The geezer looked at me like I was stupid and went, yeah, washing machine. What? Can you stop it
Right,
then?
yeah.
Turn it
Can
off,
you
because I can
turn it
still
off
hear it
then?
fucking whizzing. Do you know what I mean? Turn it off. So anyway, he's farted around for ages. I thought, I'm not going to stand out in the cold waiting for him. So I went back downstairs. There's like a bucket and a half of like literal pond water, like viscous fucking. It was grim. Yeah, it was like orangey brown. But because
Not
it's
good.
passing through their flooring and our ceiling, it's obviously picking up all the shit through it as well. And then it's passing through our light fittings. So it was just dripping for like 5 hours. I couldn't sleep, man, because it was like someone left a tap on. It was horrible. It felt like I was in Guantanamo, mate. Like I was being, brutally tortured.
Has it dried out now, or
Oh yeah.
is the ceiling still wet?
Oh, the ceiling's still. I mean, it's not wet anymore, but it's, visibly damaged.
Yeah,
There's
well.
cracks everywhere where they've just painted over the cracks before we moved in. So, like, all the cracks have literally pissed out of water straight away, obviously. And now it's all turned brown, which is nice. Like, all the walls have turned brown.
Yeah,
That's
just stain
that's
them,
good.
won't
Yeah. So, we spoke to the estate agent yesterday on the emergency line, and she basically told me it wasn't an emergency. I said, well, if your house was raining inside, I think it would be. So that mean? It's not. It's not
Cheek
like.
of that. It's not an emergency.
Imagine.
If you drown, it's an emergency. But before that point, fuck
Yeah,
off, man.
give us a ring if you get flooded out of your own house, like the fucking Great Tide. But otherwise, leave it be. Do you know what I mean? Give us a rest. It's
Yeah,
Sunday,
jog
lad.
on.
I've only worked 5 days this week. Get a grip. Unbelievable. So I called them
That's
again at
shocking.
9 a.m. this morning. They were even more upset because this guy, he won't fucking leave us alone, man. But they come round at like 11, 12 o'clock and had a little goose. Said, yeah, that's pretty damaged, isn't it? And that was it.
Cheers.
Job done. Yeah.
Appreciate that.
Pointless
So what?
calling.
What does it do then? Are they going to repair it, or what's happening?
Well, they said that they've got hold of upstairs landlord and they're going to go through the insurance. And then, long story short, it'll take another 3 months, but someone might come around and paint the dirt over. They reckon they were getting an electrician to come round ASAP, but obviously he never turned up. So that'd be nice when he turns up tomorrow and no one's in. Cheers for that.
So,
Yeah.
can you
All in all,
use the
good
plug
weekend, mate.
sockets?
Well, we can now because they've dried off a bit, but I don't. Do you know what I mean? I mean, yesterday we luckily the lighting obviously is on a separate trip to everything else, so we had no lighting, but we had everything else working, so that was all right. And then, like I said, the lighting was working now, obviously. Yeah, I'm still a bit apprehensive to use the kitchen light. I'd rather cook in the dark. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, fair enough.
Other than that, yeah, smashing weekend, mate.
That sounds Sounds pretty bleak, bro.
Yeah. Not ideal. In the pub, I post to a pub every day, right? And on the walls and the toilets, it's quite impressive. Like, every day I go in there and there's something different written on the walls. But it's normally, like, football-based, right? Because they're... They've got, like, Sky Sports. They're, like, the only pub in the whole of Buckhurst Hill. So they show the football and things like that. So everyone goes in there. But you see, like, on the walls, it's got things like You'll Never Walk Alone, Arsenal Forever. Someone just randomly wrote Deluded Cunts. Like, it's the whole thing. I really enjoy it because it's such a... Like, it's a coming together of people that hate each other. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, right.
People are literally writing Arsenal Forever and then someone underneath went, what a cunt. Like, it's lovely. Yeah. You know what I mean? There's hundreds of them. You know, there's all things like, oh, Gary loves Knob, things like that. It's just such classic. Generic. Like, I don't know who the fuck any of these people are, but that's funny. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But there was one, and I don't know, like, it's been going on for months, right? And then all of a sudden, one turned up the other day in the middle of the two urinals that just said, and that was it. There's no context. There's no, like, other slur, any digging at anyone, just that. And it's not even spelt right. It was N-I-G-A. What the fuck is that?
Oh, wow. That's bad.
So I got my little pen out of my hat, and I changed it to Nigeria. I thought, fuck them. I just thought, imagine the fucking... This is literally the kind of person that's written it, that they can't even spell the fucking word. Do you know what I mean? Unreal. Really irritating. Especially, it's such a diverse area.
This story isn't going to make sense without the bit, so I'm not even going to bother. But you can use the stuff about there being there's stuff on the wall in the bathroom. I remember a lecturer gave us a piece of paper with four excerpts on it. One was an excerpt from Shakespeare criticizing his own work. One was an excerpt from William Golding criticizing T.S. Eliot's work. One was a recent film review, a series review of a British drama. I can't remember which one. And the other one was just something that he'd seen written on one of the stalls in one of the university buildings, which was just Harry Potter is shit.
Lovely.
And he said all of these are forms of literary criticism.
Mm.
And everyone. The point was, everyone immediately said, "No, you can't say that." I mean, you got Shakespeare, you got William Golding, then you've got some kind of random film review and some graffiti. And he said, "Well, try and give me a theory of literary criticism which does not allow for things like that." And no one could. No, you can't give a theory of literary criticism or criticism of anything really, which doesn't allow for the most base and crude, vulgar opinions to be in there. If you do, then you're not. There's no way to keep it sound, basically, without then just ruining the whole point of criticism. But it's like with art. If you say that the only art that should be allowed to be called art is good art, then there could be no such thing as bad art. And therefore, art.
That's the problem.
Well, then art is just what is beautiful. But that's obviously that's very subjective in itself.
Hmm.
But if you say all art, all things can be art, if you present them for appreciation, but they can be shit art. That's the best way of looking at that. And the same thing is true of criticism. All things can be criticism if you're engaging with the literary context. It's shit criticism. Like, Harry Potter is shit, is poor. Like, that's doesn't really say anything. Doesn't tell me why, where, which one, you know, the person or the fiction, character or the books. Well, that's just up to the person. So, anyway, that was a digression.
I don't agree with that. I think Harry Potter is all right.
Is it?
Mm-hmm.
Do you say that as a straight man?
Take from that what you will.
Yeah.
So that was a straight man.
You've been living with a woman for too long, mate.
With a wizard.
Yeah, you're living with a wizard, Harry.
Moving on. So moving swiftly on. Talking of Harry Potter.
Tell me your series.
Well, bear with me. I've got to get my notes up. Oh, do you know what? Before I go on to anything else, I've just opened my notes and the first thing that's come up is iglooing. Have you ever heard of this?
No. Oh, wait, so, no, I have. Is it when you shit in ice? And...
Bro, it's horrific. I was watching, I can't remember what it was. It might have been Jordan North on his podcast, yeah.
Mm.
And they were talking about, there was a couple of people that they were in, I think they were in like Austria or something like that. And they were American expats. Yeah. And they'd met these other American expats. And they were all going to go round to theirs for Thanksgiving, right? They popped round to their house. And they said, we'll start getting stuff out of the freezer to start cooking. And the lady's going through the freezer drawer. And then she didn't know what it was. She said, what are these big like sausages in here? That's really weird. Why would you freeze that? The husband's come over and looked at them and immediately, like, not screamed, but, you know, like, it's quite rancid. And then one of the other guys has come out of his room, all embarrassed, pure red. And he's explained that he's really into iglooing, right? And what it is, you shit in a condom and freeze it. And then when it's frozen solid, you shag yourself with it. Why don't you just buy a dildo, bro? Who's got that much time on their hands? How do you get the condom around your bum lips? Do you know what I mean? How are you positioning yourself over the top? Because there's no chance that you're fishing it out.
That is rough, because that's just that. Well, that's... Unless you do it into, like, a popsicle tube.
Bruv, it was just all kinds of horrific... Like, I wasn't ready for it. Do you know what I mean?
That's not looking good, bruv. That is fucking foul. That is honestly heinous.
And then I just thought... The only thing that came into my head was... What do you eat to prepare for that? There's no chance that you can agree to a curry the night before, is it?
Stop.
Do you know what I mean? Who's having a liquid dildo, bro? It's like, you know, them waterbeds. It's like that, but in your bum. So then what do you eat?
Honestly,
because you can't have like sweet corn or anything like,
just porridge.
Because it'll be knobbly, bro. So, I mean, porridge is stodgy, too much, isn't it? I've had time on my hands, bro. I've had a whole day off.
Doing nothing but this.
I've just stared at the wall and thought about it, because this is...
Nish, but iglooing.
Bev, honestly, what do you eat? What prepares yourself? At what point do you think, I've had a really fucking hearty meal there? Proper meaty meal. I think I'm going to have to condom myself up later. Do you know what I mean? Prepare the tubes. It's just not right.
I don't like that. I don't like that I now know that information.
Sorry about that. But the mind boggles, and I know it takes all kinds to make a world, but that shouldn't.
That's up there with being a furry as things that should be just illegal.
Well, it's just not right, is it?
It's like that woman in America on My Strange, is it My Strange Addiction? I think I told you about who's like been eating poo for 12 years.
Yeah, man, I watched a video and that was fucking weird, dude. At least she didn't shag herself with it, though.
I don't know, bro. I think eating it is worse than doing yourself with it, to be fair.
If you're eating it and redigesting it, you're getting no nutrients out of it, are you?
Nah, bro, don't try and... Would you fucking eat it? Sorry, if you're saying if you did get nutrients, you would eat it.
Cows have got two stomachs, yeah, so that they can collect nutrients twice. They're not eating their own shit to redigest it, but I'm just saying that if we've only got one stomach and you're going to try and eat it to redigest it, at least have a purpose. Do you know what I mean? You're not eating it for the flaky goodness, are you? You're not eating it for the taste.
Rev, just stop, man.
There's got to be something in it. Like, you've got to be getting proteins out of it somewhere.
Mate, you're asking a cannibal why he eats human flesh here. There's no rationale to it.
But at least human flesh you get something out of it.
Yeah, prison sentence. You hope.
I did think there's loads of free bodies in there.
What was you know that bald guy who does all the Ross Kemp, that's it.
Yeah.
I remember watching an interview he did with a guy who said he claimed to be a cannibal. Or claim to have eaten human flesh in Sri Lanka or something.
Classic.
Yeah. He's a hard man, bro. Like, there are a few people, I think, who can stare me down over a screen But us looking at his eyes, man, that is a man who's seen
the problem
some things.
Is you look, yeah, exactly that. You look into his eyes and you know that the man's seen some traumatizing shit, like the kind of stuff you don't want to see. And he's going, bro, don't even try and test me.
Yeah, yeah, don't test me, bro.
Yeah. So anyway, it's series two, and he's still watching the telly.
Classic.
Yeah, liked it. So this week, or actually like last week, I watched a series called Shadow and Bone, which honestly, there's a lot of fan going about, apparently.
I can remember watching the film. Yeah.
Did you?
Yeah, it was a teen film back in the day.
Cool. So,
You watch a lot of teen series, didn't you?
Yeah, don't even. We've just started, for some reason, watching Riverdale, and I'm not about that life. We've also started watching...
Porn.
That's going to really annoy me. Mortal Instruments.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, started watching that as well. So there's a lot of this sort of stuff going on. I've actually got two, because it's the first episode of Series 2. I'd really like to... I'm going to cover Shadow and Bone quickly, because the other one might be top tier. Do you know what I mean?
All right.
So, Shadow and Bone, just quickly, if no one knows about it, it's about a bunch of people with powers, and some of them don't have powers, and some of them are like Vikings, and no one likes each other, but they all get along. But there's a massive fucking grey cloud in the middle of the land that some geezer started up for, you know, hatred. Tried to kill everyone, didn't work proper. He tried to bring his bird back from the dead or something, didn't he? Didn't work
right,
anyway.
Yeah.
There's a whole... farting around trying to clear the fog, which doesn't work very well.
Yeah.
And then it transpires that this main character, obviously she can do everything. And she clears some fog and everyone's happy again. There's another series coming soon.
All
right. For anyone that does know the series, I've really pissed that up the wall because it is actually quite good. Like I said, there's a lot of fangirling about it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It is actually quite good. I enjoyed it. I've put 8 out of 10. Purely because it jumps around quickly to move the story on, which I appreciate because a lot of programs that I watch, it's about 8 episodes of tedious bullshit and then 2 episodes of like sort of worth watching.
Yeah, yeah.
But this one sort of, it's fast paced, it's quite nice. Really. Compared to a lot of them anyway. The other thing I've been watching, and this is like suddenly a cult classic, it's one of them things that people have always talked about and I've never really cared for. It's Lucifer.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You ever watched it?
Yeah, I know people have raved about that. I watched the first couple series. No, I have watched the first couple, I think first 3 series, but it's just like...
Oh, did you?
It's the same thing over and over again. I wasn't too sure about glorifying the devil to begin with.
No, that's fair. So, I did really enjoy it, to be honest. I do rate it as quite a good... It's one of them, like, The Mentalist. It was the same sort of premise.
Yeah.
You've got the police that are trying to solve crimes and you've got this random berserker that's come out of nowhere, claims to be whatever, and actually he's pretty good. The will they, won't they storyline of love was quite cute and then all got a bit messy and then was cute again. You've got... What I appreciated was that they kept bringing new characters in with... Maybe after like the second series, they started bringing other angelic beings and things like that. And then all of a sudden, there was like a big war. But it really annoyed me because they kept talking about there was a huge war, but it was like a 5-minute piece where some people punched each other. Like it wasn't much. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I just really enjoyed how it was so ridiculous and far fetched that it was actually enjoyable.
I think the thing is, have you ever watched Supernatural?
No. Probably
should. Okay, well that is, do you know what it's about? It's about like the two brothers. Okay, well, two brothers basically are not spirit hunters, but they go about America sending demons and other beings, not just demons, but mostly demons back to hell, and getting rid of them, so they're purifying the earth basically. And Lucifer features in that as a character. Death features in that. Various angels feature in that. As it progresses, you get to see, and a lot of the things that are played around within Lucifer are done better in Supernatural.
Okay.
That's just my opinion. Supernatural is quite, you know, it has moments of humor. Most episodes, are about half an hour or a bit longer, but they're just a bit better put together. There's a greater overarching story, and the acting is slightly better. So it does, the thing that Lucifer does is it gives you a really roguish, just straight up devilish main character for people to thirst over. And it gives you a lot more porn, basically. It gives you a lot more stimulation for the eyes, because you're in LA. There's just a lot more stimulation for the eyes than there is in Supernatural, because Supernatural is an older series. But if you like Lucifer, and you go and watch the Supernatural episodes, you'll see what I mean. I think it's done differently, and it's done better than Lucifer.
Oh, I'll put that on my to watch list.
Yeah,
that'd be a good one. Yeah,
I've been watching Narcos.
Have you? I've never watched it. It's another one that's on my list to watch, but
I would watch the first series. But after that, it's up to you, because it gets a bit samey again. Well, it definitely, the first series is absolutely worth a watch. The second two series, all three series are about Pablo Escobar. And to be completely honest with you, it gets a bit like, oh, what's Pablo going to do now? Oh, what are the police going to do now? Oh, what is Pablo going to do now?
Yeah.
You could probably like just condense it. Yeah, it should have just been a series, self-contained.
Mm.
They really milked it for three, if I'm honest.
You find out of a lot of things, don't you, that after the first series, it's sort of a bit prolonged and pointless. Yeah. Just getting your money out of it.
Yeah. I like a good limited series, you know, 8 episodes. You can tell it, just basically like a really long film. You can tell a lot of the story in there, but you don't need 4 series of it.
It was like the Coen brothers with Fargo. Did you ever watch that?
Yeah, good film.
Well, the programs, as like self-contained series, they were really good.
Yeah.
Because you do one series and then the next one is completely abstract from it. It's nothing to do with the previous series.
Yeah.
So I really liked those sort of, you know, that sort of thing. But yeah, there's a lot of them out there that you think one series was enough for this, really. You know.
Well, a great example of where that backfires, doing the whole different thing each series, is True Detective, because the first series of True Detective is, I don't know, maybe top 3 drama series I've ever watched. It's incredible.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Matthew McConaughey and Woody Harrelson alongside each other is just an incredible pairing. But the next 2 series are different stories and not good. Like, they're okay, but when you compare it to the first season, nothing is all right.
Yeah. So they really went big guns with the first series, and then
they should have just done a different thing, called it something else.
Yeah.
This, you know, XYZ from the creators of True Detective.
Yeah.
That would be the best way to do it.
True Detective, something ridiculous, you know.
Yeah. Just not the same thing. But either way, yeah, still worth watching the first series.
Next. What's your existential question of the week?
Well, it's tied into the book of the week. Okay, so I've got a book by Stacey Schiff, and it's called The Witches, Salem, 1692.
Oh, you fucking love it, don't you?
Yeah,
like a throwback to episode 2.
Did I recommend this book?
No, but we talked about Salem and the witches one of the very first episodes.
Yeah. Back when this was actually funny.
Strap in, everyone, because we're about to repeat series 1. Good luck.
That's how we start off series 2.
You've got to the end. Back you fucking go.
Back we go.
Yeah.
So this is a history of the Salem witches. It's what it says on the title. And what it's trying to do is make a psychological study of that, of the fever and the frenzy which created the perfect storm within which to prosecute and try and hang a bunch of witches. Now, a lot fewer people died in the Salem witch trials than you think. Let me just get the exact number.
If you say seven, I'll be impressed.
30 people, basically. 19 of whom were executed by hanging.
Which is...
So basically, 200 people were accused, 30 people found guilty, 19 executed by hanging.
Hang on.
But they were they were 14 women and 5 men. It wasn't just men. It wasn't just women. It was 200 people accused of witchcraft in Salem, Massachusetts. 30 were found guilty, 19 were executed by hanging, 14 women, 5 men. So, it was a bit of both. But this book by Schiff is really an examination of the style of investigation that went on, what the public's response was, what the kind of common factors and features there were in the people that were getting accused, what the likely cause was, and also the cases themselves. So why did this come about? You know, people accused of certain things because of famine in the area or something like that. So why did that famine really happen? And why did people pick on the witches? And why was it Salem, Massachusetts that became synonymous with witches? Because by that point, most of Europe had stopped. Like, it was the 17th century that was the witch hunting era, but by that point, most people in Europe had stopped. It was carrying on in America. I think the last person killed for witchcraft in England was the 18th century. It didn't carry on for very long. Anyway, the point being, it's a very interesting tour de force of basically mob rule, mob reaction to things that you don't understand and what can happen. I mean, a good example would be something like the Christ's crucifixion, where Pontius Pilate doesn't want to kill Christ. And when it comes to it, he literally washes his hands ceremonially in front of the Jews. And then he says, my hands are clean of this man's blood. Here you are. You do with him what you will. And the Jews crucify him. But Pontius Pilate says, I don't want anything to do with this. But he ultimately stood by and watched what he thought to be an innocent man be crucified. So it gives an interesting account using diaries of the people who were in charge, like the judges and the pastors and the men in charge at that time, gives interesting accounts of them and how what they believed about these women, what they believed was true, and that kind of thing. So just a very interesting period of history. If people want something a bit different, you know, it's quite a microcosm, but it has some interesting psychological lessons for us today, what to avoid, and what mass hysteria can do. And what the consequences of that are, what the long-lasting effects are on the people that are left behind after such events.
It's quite interesting.
It is, yeah, you know. Yeah. And it gives a really good account of this kind of localized persecution of a group of people, which was a farce, but had very real and long-lasting psychological and cultural impact on the psychology of a state, even, but certainly of an area. You know, so this was the question I was going to ask, was, do you think, this is the big historical question. I don't know what the intro for this can be. He's been fucking thinking again.
Brilliant. It can't all be the same, for fuck's sake.
No, I don't know. I have no ideas when it comes to intros. You're the intro man.
He's got an existential question.
Put a little bit of, you know, Beethoven before I start speaking. Make me sound really intelligent and erudite.
Yeah, mate. If only we can do that all the time, eh?
Yeah, cheers, blood. So
just put Beethoven under that as well.
Yeah. There we go.
Brilliant.
That's title of the episode. But the question is, do you think it matters where something happened? And to, like, the effect you can... what you can take away from an event, basically. So... this came out of, I had the opportunity recently to visit Auschwitz.
Okay.
Very harrowing. It was, Yeah, organised by the university. You go to Gatwick or Stansted or somewhere. You stay that night in a hotel and you get a plane to Auschwitz. Mm-hmm. Like, literally, the airport is, I don't know, 20 minutes away.
Yeah.
You go from there, you go around it for the day, and then you get on a plane and you go back the same night and stay at the Premier again. So you wait for 2 nights, and the university would pay for it if you are... It was like a small group of us who were... available to go because of funding and you know, we were theology and philosophy students, that kind of thing. Anyway, I had the option to go to Auschwitz. I couldn't because it was in a week and I'm still working on my dissertation, and I thought I can't really lose 3 or 4 days of writing.
I suppose you can just pop there when you want, to be fair.
That's it. It's not going anywhere, is it? Yeah. Yeah, it's not going anywhere. So I do want to go. I just couldn't this time. But the thing I was thinking of was, so with the lesson, if all of the concentration camps had been extirpated, like destroyed at the end of the war, everything removed, would we have the kind of psychological consciousness that we have today of the Holocaust? Because there are very few events in history that we now know so well as the Holocaust. Like, you're forced to learn about it in school and British education,
mm-hmm.
and most European education, really. You have to learn about the Holocaust of the Jews, because there's been many Holocausts in history. Holocausts have happened more recently, not killed as many people, but things like the Ugandan genocide or the Rwandan massacres, things like that, have happened more recently. Or Gaddafi killed millions of his own people.
Mm.
You know, Stalin killed tens of millions of his own people more than Hitler ever killed of the Jews, and things like that. So there have been more, but there aren't places set up to memorialize those, where those people were taken and exterminated.
So you
can go to Rwanda and you can go to the villages and you can see memorials to those people. And the same thing in Uganda. You can go and see like statues to those, but you can't go to the place where those things happened. And so it got me thinking, how much does it matter if we know where something happened and can point to it, how much we take away from it? Because the other thing I was thinking, so Salem, it's a good example, 1692, these things happen. You go to Salem, you immediately think of witches. Most film, like Hocus Pocus is a film, Salem, brilliant. Witches, like so many things about witchcraft, we think of Salem. But go back even further into something like Troy. Mm. So Troy is obviously the semi-mythical city of the enemies of the Greeks. And it's the setting of one of the most famous epics in history, the Iliad.
Mm-hmm.
We think we know where ancient Troy was. It's in the Bay of Troad. And we, it was a turn of the sort of around the late 19th, earliest 20th century. They think they found where it was, but they can't be sure. And what they found there was the remains of a city and other structures, but nothing like what is described in the Iliad.
Mm.
But, you know, knowing that that's where it is, but not actually knowing if that's truly the place, it doesn't really add... Like, you can read the Iliad and take away as much as you can from the Iliad by not knowing anything about where the real Troy is, as you can from knowing stuff about the real Troy. Like, it doesn't really... This is from my perspective, because I've read the Iliad before I knew about this, and then I've read it again after I knew about this. Nothing really changed for me. So I'll stop talking and see what you think, but I just, like, just thinking about what a place is and how much that impacts the kind of lessons you can take away from what happens there.
It's difficult because it's different for each scenario. Things like things like Troy, you don't necessarily need specific detail, you know, a specific place that you can marry up the whole story surrounding it, because it could quite as easily be a made up place where everything happened. You know what I mean? Like, it could have been a fictitious whatever. But then something like Auschwitz or any sort of concentration camps, I think the fact that they haven't been taken down is more startling than the idea that you can go and visit them. I mean, it's fucking mental that you can go and visit them.
What, you can go and see these things,
yeah. But it's even more so that, imagine at the end of the war, when all of this terrible shit had happened, all of these millions of people were dead, and at no point did anyone go, we should probably dismantle this, because it's sort of quite harrowing to all the people that live around here and know exactly what happened. They didn't, at no point, I don't think, at the end of the war, did they think, we'll probably keep this up for about 40 years and then we'll start flogging it to people.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Build some flats.
Have a gift shop on the way out. No problem.
But that's the other thing, because if it's past the point where you can destroy it.
Yeah.
Like, you can't, it's past that. I mean, the reason they kept it, obviously, was for that reason, to make sure it never happened again, so you'd be watching it, right? Mm-hmm. You have to, so it's like, there's great, great pictures of the Allies forcing the German soldiers to watch videos of what happened, and part of the reason they kept the concentration camps was so that Germans could go and see, because they hadn't been told about it and they thought it was lies from the Allies. But then no one at the time said, well, once this is done, we'll get rid of them.
Well, that's what I mean. You couldn't have just filed all the Germans past them and gone, right, well, that's everyone's seen it now, so we'll just tear it down. It's one of those things, isn't it? Like you said, you can't just now, imagine someone now just put forward planning permission on it. So we're just going to tear this down and build flats, mate.
That's an empty space there that could be utilised.
Yeah, it's an impossible task. It's going to be there forever. Well, it's not going to be there forever. Yeah. It's going to be there just the same as we, back in the day, they would have had, you know, all of the building, the great buildings and temples and things that it would have been sacrilege to take down or destroy or whatever. And they just left them there. And then after thousands of years, they've just sort of worn away to nubs. Just what's going to happen.
Yeah, a lot of it will just take the role of a kind of a mythical. It's not, we're not mythical as that never happened, but it takes on a mythos. It takes on a meaning deeper than its ground, than its foundations. And it becomes, it is a symbol. It's a symbol of all kinds of things for different people. For the Jews, it's a symbol of like a culmination of centuries of persecution. And amongst other things. But it's a symbol of what happens when you give, I think it was Edmund Burke that said, all that is required for evil to triumph is for a good man to say and do nothing. And that's what Auschwitz is a reminder of, that's all it takes. So you can't be a bystander for evil, because that just means evil wins. But equally, that's a lesson that's been throughout history. Like that lesson has been taught to us again and again. It's in the Bible. You know, the Bible says exactly the same thing. It's been around for thousands of years, that lesson, and we haven't really learned that much from it. So having these concentration camps might, in a local sense, keep that away. But what is it that we've learned from that specific place, really? So my point is, there's a negative side to this. There are instances in history, I think, in relatively recent history, which are just as viscerally accessible to us, if not more so. Things like the Rwandan genocide in particular. So many pictures and videos of that stuff happening are available to see, right? Not the same for concentration camps. Like, we see what happened afterwards, but there's very few images or videos of what was going on in there. So we have to rely on first-hand accounts. But in our psyche, the Holocaust is the worst thing that's ever happened.
Mm-hmm. Do you think most people, because we've learned about it from school? Like you said, it's been drilled into us for years.
I think it is. But I think that can have a damaging effect, because it makes you less empathetic towards other things that are happening today. You look at, like, I've caught myself going at thinking, like, you know, I'm looking at horrors that are happening were happening over in the Middle East or other places, and think, yeah, it's not as bad as a Holocaust, though, is it? And I'm thinking, why did I think that? Why am I thinking that? That's not helpful, and it's not fair, because the people there suffering unimaginable horrors that I have no experience of. Why am I so attached to defending the experience of people in the concentration camps, which was also terrible, but like, I shouldn't be thinking that's not as bad. But so my point is, I think there can be a positive but also negative impacts and effects on your psyche when you sort of how you associate horror and state prosecuted genocide with, for instance, Auschwitz or something, rather than just with terrible people in power.
Do you also, going back to the, do you also think that because it's in Europe and it's very close to home, as it were, then it's obviously a lot more, you can feel it more because it's closer to us and we were involved in it. Whereas, as opposed to the idea of like everything from sort of Italy down, we're so far removed from it that it doesn't really affect us.
Yeah.
Even if we saw videos of it, you know, you can, especially nowadays, because there's so many special effects, there's, you know, all kinds of films out there, there's all kinds deep of fakes, horrors, gore, whatever. So you're so far removed from the idea that I'm watching a bloke literally having his limbs torn off in front of me.
Yeah.
Because you've already seen it 100 times before on films. It's not real, but it is real, but it's not real. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. No, I totally agree. And localism is a real thing. Like, people are interested in what's happening in their locality, and that's pretty much, that will always be the case.
Your question is the point. It does, sometimes it does matter about location.
Yeah. I think sometimes we forget how much we're affected by knowing where things are, and some people, for instance, in the broader question on a much less dark scale, some people don't care about the house they grew up in. They just don't. They don't care. I'm one of those people. The house I grew up in, I love, and I love the memories of it. But it's the memories that I made in that house that stick with me. There are other houses that are much more important to me. Like my grandma's house. Yeah, it's only a house, but that's not the case for some people. Some people are really attached to their childhood home.
Yeah,
like my granny.
I can understand why. I can understand why. Yeah. Because emotionally you are attached to it. That's the way it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
But equally, at some point you need to realise that firstly, all of those emotions happened in the past anyway.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it's all, everything that has happened. But if you need, it's like people that have to move from their homes, from their like childhood homes and things like that, or they're forced out or whatever. And at the end of the day, it's just a roof with four walls. Like, it doesn't matter. So what if, you know, you have got a deeper connection with it. The same with, like, if anything happened in the motherland, as it were, you've got a deeper connection with it than if it happened abroad. But it's still the same thing. Do you know what I mean? Objectively, it's still just a thing. It's not, you know. I mean, at the end of the day, if you think about it too much, we're all going to die and you can't take fuck all with you. So it doesn't matter, does it?
I know. I mean, I think I am certain lifetime... No, in both our lifetimes, we will see the end of mandatory Holocaust education in British schools.
Without sounding horrible, I'd like to think so.
Well, I know what you mean, because there will come a point at which that stops being a useful lesson for us to learn, because there are other more recent ones.
Mm.
And World War II history won't be as much of a fan base as it has now.
It's going to be further in the past, so it's not going to be as relevant.
Well, what I mean is, once the last Holocaust survivors have died, and it's nearly that, it's nearly at that now. My mum's mum was 13 when World War II broke out. So she's of an age where she remembers everything, and she can still tell it to you like it's today. But she's 90, she'll be 97 this year. Like,
wow.
You know, there aren't many people are going to be around. Give it 10 years, most people who are still alive will have either been born too early to remember anything, or there'll be a few people left, maybe.
Mm.
So you'll need to move on 20, 30 years to get to a point where there are enough people around to think that this is something useful to talk to teach their children. But something else, I think there are better ways of teaching people history, just as a blanket statement. I believe there are better ways of teaching people history than we do in British primary and secondary schools. And one of the things that we need to do is give people a better understanding of world history and of the length of history. Mm. You know, my love of history comes from building a picture that's about 6,000-7,000 years old and spans all of the world. And you get a better sense of what history is about. You get a better sense of how places and people groups are affected by contexts. And you learn to understand that you're just part of a much bigger picture. Anyway, that's a separate issue. And that's a question I'm going to ask later on. But yeah, so the point was, I think we both agree, it really depends on the context, but there are both negative and positive side effects of associating a certain type of tragedy or beneficence to the populace with a place. Late antique, Byzantine, and Islamic studies.
Fucking hell. So you're going to study Islam and some antique furniture?
Not furniture, you fucking dolt.
Antiques. So you just
you invertebrate. It's anything from about 500 AD to 1450 odd.
That's quite broad, mate. So we'll narrow it down a bit.
Well, I can do that in the modules I choose, but you can do a lot of each. I'm going to learn Arabic.
Are you?
Yeah. It's a rollercoaster of emotions being my friend.
Friend's a bit extreme, isn't it?
Is it? Acquaintance.
Co-host.
Co-host. Oh, that's good.
All right.
Oh, man. I'm tired as well now. Talking to you is draining.
Fair, it is quite... the missus says that all the time.
It's like being around the Grinch. No coming back from that. Imagine that. No. Imagine your wife turns to you in bed and she hasn't said anything for ages. Like, you just woken up. She says, "You know, you are a boring man, aren't you?" And just turns back over and just goes to sleep.
That's literally what happens. Literally what happens. I could be mid conversation, mate, and she'd stare at me and just go, "Just shut the fuck up, will you? God, it's a fucking yawn-a-thon with you." Anyway. See you later. Right,
have a good night. Yeah, you sleep well. Get some rest. Yeah. We'll speak to you soon.
Yeah, what?
All right, mate. Bye-bye.